Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. You know, there's a real dark time ahead for some children and families in need this holiday season. So as you plan your limited holiday parties or just give some thought to the needs of some, how about you think about canned or non-perishable foodstuffs or possibly an inexpensive toy taken to your local Toys for Tots Center. Take the food to the nearest food bank or food distribution center. You can find locations online in your city, and you would be making a lot of folks' holidays a lot better knowing they can feed their kids and themselves, and possibly give their kids a small gift or two. So how about you give what you can this season? And now please settle in for a brand new episode of The Writer's Block, and happy holidays from all of us at The Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am here on the air with Mr. Russ Avison, my occasional co-host from sunny Southern California.
Yes, although not so sunny today.
No, huh?
No, we had some clouds, almost rain.
Wow, it's been snowing and raining like kind of bad here the last two or three days, so.
Really?
Yeah, for those that don't know, I'm up in my secret studio up somewhere in Idaho.
Somewhere.
Hey, I had a really terrific experience today. I just had to share it. I was dealing with a brand new handyman company, and I just felt that because the guy was so nice, I just felt it necessary to say that if you're a boy, you can't go wrong giving A+ repairs and landscaping a call. This guy is like professional. He's really pleasant. His name is Bryson, and he will get in and fix your stuff and get out with no problems. And it doesn't hang around talking and chatting and making everybody feel uncomfortable.
And I need my stuff fixed.
Yeah, there you go. And he doesn't he doesn't charge you an arm and a leg or your firstborn. So give him a call at 208-695-5830, or you can email him directly at Bryson, Bryson, McGuire, McGuire, @gmail.com. I guarantee you won't be sorry. I wasn't sorry. I'm going to be calling him back because I got some other stuff that needs to get done. But the guy was awesome. Just totally awesome. And, you know, it takes so long to find people that are really good. And this kid was really good. So there you have it. A1. So, ba-dum-bump. So what you been up to, Mr. Avison?
Well, let's see. It's crazy. Our boarding business has been really terrible because nobody's traveling.
Right.
But, oh, my gosh, my training business is insane. It is so busy. Classes are full. I'm doing, two privates a day because everybody got dogs because they can spend time at home with them. And so now they need them trained. So it's been pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, every time I call you, you've got a class going on. So.
Yeah. So that's been good. And weather's fine and everybody's staying healthy. So we're good.
Excellent. Now, are you going to, if the vaccine is offered, are you going to, take the shot?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Me too. I just can't see not. So, and I'm tired of doing all this crap we got to go through. So,
but I have my special vaccine right now. Here it is.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Right here.
What is it? Crown Royal?
No, actually, it's just it's a Spindrift sparkling water.
Oh,
I just thought it sounded refreshing.
Well, you know, I have to say tonight's guest is he's a very good friend of one of the show's best friends, Claire Fullerton. He worked with Claire for another number of years. Claire is just a sweetheart. She's listening tonight, so if you're listening, hi, Claire. You know what? Let's get into. You know what, Maestro, play a little intro. Anyway, Paper our guest tonight. There we go. Okay, the guy has been a DJ. He's been in publicity. He has his own company now doing audio and I think a little bit of video stuff for people all over the United States. He is just a terrific, terrific guy. He worked with Clear Fulgen for a number of years at a radio station in Tennessee. And please, with our honor, to please bring you Mr. Gary Farron tonight on the Writer's Block. Please welcome Gary.
Hello there.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
I am great. And boy, I couldn't ask for a better intro. Thank you for that.
Well, that's paperback writer and your book's a paperback. So, hey, what are you going
to
do?
I know. I think I wanted to be a paperback writer ever since that song came out. So perfect.
I am a paperback writer.
Yes, you are. Indeed, you are.
Indeed, I am. Hey, it's, you know, it's so great to have you on the show. You know, as soon as we heard about you and then Claire gave you such a sterling recommendation, we just could not, we made room for you. Bookie moved a couple of people around and got you on. Wow. And it was just our honor to have you. And please, please, please just accept our gratitude for you taking the time out to be on our little show.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you guys for having me. First of all, a shout out to Claire because she is so awesome. She should be my publicist, really, because she's always plugging me to somebody. And thank you for that, Claire. But I couldn't have asked for a more timely interview either, because tomorrow, I don't think we knew this, any of us, when we booked this back in, what, September, maybe?
Yeah, we did not know, yes.
Tomorrow, Paul is coming out with his next album.
That's it.
Yep. It's called McCartney 3, and I can't wait.
In fact, he is being interviewed by Chris Rock, which is going to be live on YouTube tonight at 11:15 or 11:45 Eastern time.
Who is he?
Exactly. Yes. Looking forward to that.
And he's going to be playing. And he's going to be playing a little bit of from the new album.
Oh, great!
Oh, excellent. Well, it's Gary. Your book is of course called After Abbey Road. It chronicles the music done individually by John, Paul, George, and Ringo after the Beatles broke up. And we were talking on the phone the other night. I had no idea that George Harrison's first album, which was a triple album. It was part of his songbook that he had written while he was with the Beatles.
Yes, there were so many songs he had backlogged that he couldn't get on Beatle albums because he was allocated maybe only one or two songs per album, even toward the end.
Right.
A prolific songwriter that he was, he had tons of songs. And it, as you say, a triple album was his debut of most of them.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that album is, I used to have two of them. I don't know what happened to either one of them. You know, you get married, you get divorced, you move out, stuff disappears. But they were, those albums were just so, so good. And you would ask me the question the other night, who was your favorite Beatle? Well, I didn't think about it for a minute. And I quite honestly, until I actually thought about it, I'd never really had one. You know, George, I suppose, would be my favorite, but I always liked them together as a band. Mm-hmm. But George, I think because I was a guitar player and a lot of my friends were guitar players, and we used to sit and listen to some of his riffs, even when he was with the Beatles, and he would get so innovative. And I mean, like I tell in Russ today, we were talking earlier and I said, you know, George would go play in a trash can if he got the sound that he wanted. You know, I mean, the guy was just phenomenal when it came to coming with innovating sound ideas. Yes. And they did all of that on a 4-track machine, which always amazed me. And it was just like, George is my answer here, Gary, George.
Oh, yeah. And not a bad choice at all. He really was a talented guy. He probably, you know, John is considered maybe the most deep Beatle in terms of the message. But boy, George really, really got inward, you know, even more so sometimes than John did.
Right. Well, George was a lot more spiritual.
Yes.
And I was like, sweet Lord, and what happened there. Mm-hmm. He lost the lawsuit, but he wound up with the rights to the song. That is very cool.
What a wonderful, wonderful round circle event. Yeah.
I know, huh? But I mean, you have dedicated one page to every song that they did individually after the Beatles broke up. And it's amazing because some songs I never even heard of. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of people stopped listening to the Beatles as a band or as individuals a lot after they broke up. So, I mean, I heard some Paul McCartney by himself, and then I heard With Wings, and it was the basic stuff. And then John and the Plastic Ono Band, which was never my favorite. And then Ringo by himself, and then George was just like, wow, George was with everybody. And then, of course, his last big thing was the Traveling Wilburys, which I loved them. I got their record. It was just like tremendous. I just love that record.
And, you know, I think that was maybe George's favorite period during his recording, or his post-Beatles recording anyway, teaming up with his musical buddies, Tom Petty,
Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison.
Yeah, right.
You know, people who had nothing to prove anymore. They had already made it. They'd succeeded. They were just having fun together.
Exactly. And what amazed me is that, it was Roy Orbison, Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, George Harrison, and Jeff Lynne. And Jeff Lynne, he was an old friend of George's, but I forgot. Jeff Lynne was the front man for Electric Light Orchestra. So,
yeah.
And then it dawned on me, oh, that's who he is.
Yes. And they were always considered kind of the electric Beatles. You know,
right.
They were highly influenced by them as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I think every band in England at the time was influenced by the Beatles, or every band in the world was influenced by the Beatles in some degree or another.
Absolutely.
I know even I was, and I was, 16, 17 years old with, my little acoustic guitar.
In your vocal group, Jim, did you ever do any Beatles songs?
We did not. We the covers that we did were done by friends of ours that were locals, and we did some of their tunes, but mostly songs that we did I wrote.
Okay. Yeah.
So
and you were influenced by them a little bit, did you? The Beatles, did you?
I was influenced by their guitar work, by their blending of the instruments, which always amazed me. Because a lot of people tend to play and they get muddy because everybody is trying to step on everybody else. Mm-hmm. But Beatles always managed to keep everything separate, which I liked. And so when I did the arranging for my band, Sundown, I made sure that every instrument was set differently and a different instrument.
You learn so much from listening to Beatles records and the mastery of their producer, George Martin.
Oh my God, he was a magician, and then of course I learned a lot out of vocal harmonies and how to put together harmonies and seconds and thirds and just listening to them, because when they first came together they couldn't sing very well together, until George Martin got a hold of them, and look at him now, or we'll look at him then. I mean.
Yeah, he really was the fifth Beatle. I don't know if every Beatle fan knows the name George Martin. I imagine most of them do because he was such an integral part of their thing. But as the fifth Beatle, he really made a difference in their music. I mean, you can hear a huge difference from their early first album even to the third one.
Right, right. Well, he did a lot of...
It was also interesting to notice that when going through your book, that a lot of the songs you see that they were originally put together one way, and then George Martin stepped in and says, no, let's do this or let's do that. And then they became big hits.
Exactly. Yeah. He would be one to take, say, the chorus of the song and make that the beginning of the song, get the hook out there immediately.
Right.
On a song like Paperback Writer, you know?
Right. And, and then he would throw in little electric piano riffs. Where you didn't expect one, all of a sudden one would show up and you go, well, that's got to be George Martin because, Paul's playing bass and George is playing guitar. So, and it's only four tracks, so it's George Martin at that point.
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of keyboard music on songs from the 60s, but In My Life had one of the nicest, I don't know if it's a harp. Actually, it was a sped up piano to try to sound like a harpsichord.
Right. But their stuff was even later. I mean, Paul McCartney's stuff is still tasty. The guy has got a touch for music, and he really truly does. And it's delicious to him. And he's also a magician putting sounds together.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say a good example is Mull of Kintyre. When he got together with the bagpipers out of, and they were going, what? You want us to do what?
Yeah. You know? And recorded outside on the mull. Yeah.
Right. On the mull live, with the wind blowing. And here's Paul with a guitar playing and singing a song.
Using a sock for a microphone.
Exactly. Using a sock for a microphone cover. Exactly. And you know his producer was down there with no sock on going, oh, my feet are killing me. Because, of course, it wasn't Paul's sock.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. That sock is probably worth a lot right now, you know?
They just sold a bunch of their stuff, and I'm sure that sock's probably going to show up one of these days. Nice. What in the world got you into this? You know what? Before I ask that question, we're going to take a real quick break, so don't go away. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. We'll be back with Mr. Gary Fallon. Farron. Oh, I don't know.
I know why you did that. I know exactly why you did that.
Because you told me to, and we'll be back with you in about 30 seconds. But right now, here's a little word from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music, to self-help, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day? LATalkRadio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back in the studio with Mr. Gary Fallon.
Yeah, that was
my
fault.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I said it's Fallon with an R. Yeah,
right.
There you go.
Yeah, Fallon with an R. Thanks, Gary. If you want to call and talk to Gary tonight, or Russ or me, if you want to talk to me, I don't know why. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, Claire, write this down. 323. I know how your memory is. 323-203-0815. Yeah, she goes to Ireland way too often. I think her brain is becoming fried with Irish something or other. Anyway, what in the world prompted you? I don't think anybody has ever written the definitive after Abbey Road. And so here you are, 40 years after their breakup. And, you know what? We have a caller, and I bet I know who it is. Go ahead. Hi, you're on LA Talk Radio, this is The Writer's Block. We have a caller,
I bet I know who it is. Hello, it's Claire.
Oh, Claire, how are you?
I am just loving this. You know, I can't get enough of Gary. I've always pronounced his last name Ferron. How do you pronounce your last name? I've only known you for 25 years.
It's like Smith, S-M-I-T-H, to say Smith, and you got it made.
It's Fallon with an R. Fallon with an R. Remember that, Claire.
Is it Farron?
Farron, yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, excuse me, did I know you by another name when we worked at Rock?
You did. Let's not get into that at all, but yes, we should.
Okay, let's not. You know what I was hoping that you would do, because I can't get enough of your radio voice, just the quality is just so beautiful, if you could give a sample, for instance, of just any song that's in, you know, that you write about in the book, and tell the readers and the listeners just, you know, a little bit of how your world-class book is structured in terms of the background information that is not well-known at all. I was hoping you'd read.
That actually was the question I just asked, Claire. I didn't ask him to read anything, but he can.
Oh, okay.
I certainly can. You're talking about reading from the book itself?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind. Pick a song.
Just one of those little short ditties would be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I obviously don't have the music here, but I can tell you the story behind it if you like.
Okay.
Is that what you had in mind, or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, well, give me a second to find a good one here. I have so many favorites, but I want to pick just the right one here. Okay, how about, you know what? I like this story from a song called Borrowed Time. This is from John Lennon's, they released it in 1984 as a single, but it's from one of his earlier recordings. I'm finding it here. I think here we are. Okay. Excuse me. This was released in March of 1984. It's from the album Milk and Honey, all right, which was their second album. And by them, I mean John and Yoko. In June 1980, John's last vacation was a trip that could have taken his life even sooner. Having been told by a psychic that he should take a long journey in a southeastern direction, John chartered a 45-foot yacht to sail from Rhode Island to Bermuda, a 700-mile commitment. Within 48 hours of what was to be a five-day voyage, the Megan J encountered a terrifying storm with gale-force winds that rendered the entire crew battered and seasick. John himself had to steer the vessel for a six-hour stint. He soon found his sea legs, and at the peak of the storm, could be heard shouting sea chanties and cursing the gods. John called it the most exhilarating experience of his life. Arriving safely, he was newly empowered and spent the next 2 months in Bermuda writing over 24 songs. At a local club, John heard Hallelujah Time by Bob Marley and the Wailers. The reggae song's mention of living on borrowed time resonated with him after his victory at sea, and he penned Borrowed Time from the perspective that he used to live without a thought for tomorrow, but now saw a brighter future.
Hot damn.
Wow. I love that. I've read your book. I've read every single excerpt from it or every single page, and I just cannot wax rhapsody enough about how much I love that book, because I thought I knew, you know, a lot of the background on the Beatles, and I was wrong. And that book is incredibly, you know, behind the scenes insightful. So I understand it's doing well in Japan.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it's doing well in countries I never dreamed it would get out there. But I think Japan is the most amazing to me.
How did that happen?
Well, the Japanese are huge musicality people. They love music.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think most of the Beatles cover bands, in fact, come from Japan. You see a lot of them on YouTube.
Yeah, a lot of them do. And, you know, when I was in Japan for like 4 months before I went my second tour in Vietnam, we used to go to this little music store in Hokkaido, in Sapporo. And we'd pick up a guitar. Me and a guy named Mike Music. His father was, that was the guy that used to do the voice for Carlton the Doorman. Lorenzo Music. It was his son, Mike. And we used to go in there and pick up guitars in the store and start playing and singing little songs that we had written. And boy, the Japanese would flock in there, and they just sit there and smile and laugh and point and clap. And, you know, geez, they wouldn't let you leave.
That is so cool.
The Japanese love, especially English music and, well, English language music. They love it. So.
I don't understand. And, you know, Gary, you can tell me, how did your book get over there?
Amazon.
On a boat.
Mostly.
Yeah. On a boat.
Yeah. A psychic sent it over on a 25-foot yacht.
That's what I said, Blair.
I deserve that.
Blair, you're spending way too much time in Ireland. You got to stop it now, darling.
you're getting a wee
bit tasty.
Well, listen, I just want to love y'all and leave you. I'm going to listen back on the radio. It's not as good on my telephone as it is over the speakers that I have, you know, listening to y'all live. But hug, hug, kiss, kiss, the two of y'all. I'm enjoying the show.
We love you, Claire.
Thanks, Claire.
I'll continue to listen. Sure. Talk to y'all later. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Where did you come up with all this backstory, Gary? I mean, that's actually made me start wondering. As soon as I started reading the pages of this book, I'm going, wait a minute, where did you get all this information? Who did you have to kill to rob their files?
I wish I could say it was all from memory, because I've been a Beatles fan ever since the beginning and did know a lot of the stories. But obviously, there's a lot of details that just aren't readily available. I'll tell you how the whole thing began, if you're interested.
Absolutely.
I actually
Please.
Actually, I have to give a little bit of praise to a gal named Clemency Burton Hill. She wrote a book called Year of Wonder, and it's about classical music. I was actually walking through Novel, which is a very popular bookstore in Memphis, and they have this section, I think most bookstores do, recommended reading by the staff. And here was Year of Wonder, and it had a violin on the cover or something. So I picked it up, interested, and here it is. For every day of the year, in this Year of Wonder, she had a summary of some classical work that she considered just too good to miss. And it starts like January 1st. You've got, I think it was Bach's Mass in B minor, something like that. And it goes on each day of the year. You have a Chopin, you have a Beethoven, you have a Verdi. And I wound up buying the book, actually, because I am kind of interested in expanding my classical music knowledge. But I got to thinking, all these musical heroes of yore, what about my musical heroes? Now, would there be a book that encompassed a song a day of the Beatles? And there wasn't really anything quite like that. And as I explored the premise, I sort of abandoned that idea because during their time together, their output of, I think it was 217 songs, maybe all told on the albums, wouldn't fill a 365-day year. So I kind of moved on from that idea to, well, gee whiz, they've had a lot of output over the last 50 years since their breakup. What does that amount to? And actually, it turns out to be 220 songs currently. And I said, from there, well, there's so many books already, and I own a lot of them, about the Beatles' songs when they were together, the stories behind the songs, which always fascinated me anyway as a songwriter. But there were very little ways to explore what they've written since in terms of the inspiration, the recording process, who was recording it, et cetera, that only diehard fans who really want to dig deep could even get close to. So I said, you know what? Is this book already out there? And it wasn't. So their post-Beatles singles became a passion for me. And in about 6 or 7 months, I did the research, which came from newspaper articles, internet articles, the albums themselves, interviews online, on YouTube. I mean, there's probably 12 different sources, as well as other books about their individual solo careers that filled some of the gaps. But yeah, you know, some of the songs were really hard to dig some information about. So I'm counting, you know, my lucky stars that I even was able to finish this book. But I'm pretty pleased with it. I think it's an honor for me more than anything that I was able to sort of contribute something to the Beatles, you know, anthology of books. Yeah.
Right. Well, the last big Beatles book that came out was the anthology, I believe, wasn't it? Was it not? That was supposed to be the big definitive.
That's been a really good one. Yeah, it's been a few years since that one. And that was kind of endorsed by them themselves. So.
Right.
Yeah. And again, it's another one that encompasses more, I think, their careers together than as solo artists.
Have you heard from anyone as far as involved any of the individual artists or their families as far as coming out with the book? Has anybody commented?
No. You know what? I keep having friends say, you need to send a copy to Paul and Ringo and, you know, just get it in their hands. And I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe there's some little thing in there about one of their songs that they're going to come back and say, that's not what happened at all.
You know? Right.
No,
it's always the case.
That would be great. That would be a great honor to get it in their hands, but that's not even a priority for me. I'm just happy that you guys have enjoyed it. Thank you for your comments.
Oh, I loved it. I just, you know, like I said, I always liked George's stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, getting into, and then I was forced, of course, reading the book. I had to go on YouTube and watch some of the other, you know, the videos and stuff. And I like it all. I mean, you know, talented people always impress me.
Yeah.
I didn't always have to like their stuff, but I appreciate the talent.
Yeah. You got to respect it, whether you like it or
exactly.
not. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, Gary, I actually followed your suggestion at the beginning of the book. Is I went through the list and picked out probably about 40 songs that I wanted to know about. And I went and I sat down and I listened to each one of them as I was reading what you had to say about each one. And it really did allow me to enjoy the song from a different perspective. And therefore, it became closer in my heart.
Nice, Russ. Thanks for saying that. I was hoping people would. That's terrific.
Well, and one thing I got out of the book that I don't know if everybody's going to get it, but is that I think Paul still has a pain in his heart over the way that he and John broke things up.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, you hear differing stories, even from him. I think sometimes, his, you know, like most of us, his memory is happy some days and sometimes right. wistful other days. But I've heard stories in which he says they were kind of getting back together toward the end, and he'll always be grateful for that.
Right.
He was the ones. I'm sorry.
Paul was the one that broke things up.
Well, you know what? Yeah, that is kind of the way it's looking in retrospect. But I was going to say he was also the one who got John and Yoko back together, or at least was instrumental after their breakup, you know, during John's, what he called, the lost weekend.
Well, I think it was more than a weekend, but yeah, when he was in LA hanging around the pool with Harry Nilsson.
Yes. What mischief did they get into, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Well, John could get into mischief. There's no doubt there.
Oh, yeah. Needs no help at all.
But it amazed me that even after they had broken up, that Paul still had mention on some of the John's work as co-author. And it was just never totally, truly, when they were together as long as they were, from like 1959 or 1958 to 1970, that you can ever really divorce your friendships, you know, and the stuff you do.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. I have to think back to a friend of my own, actually, Bad Dog, who also worked at the radio station with Claire and myself. One day he said, you know what? And a huge Beatles fan he is, or he was as well. Unfortunately, he passed on a few years ago. But anyway, Bad Dog said one year, you know what? Let's call George Martin. this was off the air. This was just like after we had lunch or something. He said, let's call George. I said, okay. I thought he was joshing me, but what did he do? He got on the horn and he called Montserrat. And we had a conversation with George Martin. And he was as... but we were honored. We were just like, our jaws were hanging after the phone call. Did we actually talk to George Martin? Good grief.
Yeah. But, you know, those Brits have a way of being gracious, even if they're really totally pissed off at you.
Right.
Russ and I actually have had that opportunity to have that conversation with a guy named Peter James.
Right.
and we tried to get three times to pre-record his show. And we could never get him until we finally got him. And he was sitting down. He was having his martinis during his happy hour when we finally got him on the phone. So we said, well, what do you drink? Vodka or gin martinis? Oh, vodka. He says, shaken, not stirred.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Yep. Hey, we're going to take another real quick break, and then we'll be back. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host. And right now, we're going to hear a little word about All Dogs Rule.
That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be if they can't be with you. Next time you need to be away from home and you can't take your four-legged friend with you, let him stay at All Dogs Rule. All Dogs Rule is a cage-free camp environment where your dog gets to run and play with other dogs among orange trees in the country setting of Fillmore. And round-trip transportation is available. When your dog returns home, that smile on his face will leave you asking, whose vacation was better? Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100.
That is true. And we are back with our guest, Gary Farron, and of course, Russ Avison. And I have to say that my dog spent a weekend at All Dogs Rule, and Jerry and I were in Las Vegas at her son's wedding.
And when she's never forgiven you.
Oh, my God. And Russ brought the dog in the door, and she immediately went in the living room and peed. Hadn't done that in 2 years. She was so pissed off at us for leaving her. But she had a great time, Russ said, so I'm okay with that.
And I taught her that, you know.
There you go. Now, Gary, is there another book planned? Maybe when they actually were together as a band?
You know what? There are so many books about them when they were together and their songs, but it is a possibility. In fact, that's kind of what I started writing when I began the After Abbey Road. And then eventually I said, well, you know what? There's already books that say how, you know, Help was written and
right.
et cetera. So the world really didn't need another, you know, song or a book about the songwriting back in those days. But like I said, because I felt a void in the after Beatles years, I said, I'll try that. And luckily, it seems to be the only book out there of its kind, and it's doing very well. I'm so pleased by that.
Well, you should.
Those are things, but the one that really stood out to me is that you have a song that's listed twice on the table of contents. It's Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey. And I didn't know that Paul was behind the album Thrillington, which was basically a instrumental cut for cut of the Ram album.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very interesting album. Have you heard any of it or checked it out?
I did. Actually, I did listen to a couple cuts, and it was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not exactly easy listening. It's almost like, I don't know, old, what do you call them? Not concert hall music, but back in the days of vaudeville. What do you call those venues? The, you know,
it's really... Burlesque houses?
What is it?
Burlesque.
Oh, okay. Some of it sounds a little burlesque.
Well, yeah, well, the burlesque houses were where they used to do the vaudeville.
That's true, yeah. Well, dance hall, I don't know. There's some phrase right. I can't even think of right now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's all over the place. It's some middle of the road and some jazz and some vocal ensemble. It's a very quirky album. But if you're a fan of Paul and Linda's Ram album, you'll probably enjoy Thrillington just to see, okay, here's another version of it.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And as I listened to it, I think what made it took some effort to listen to it because, you know, your mindset is in the original song that you've heard, and then you listen to this instrumental and your brain is trying to work on it to process what you're listening to because it's so different. Right. But it was very enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, Uncle Albert isn't even my favorite cut on the album, but there's a mm-hmm. lot of good things on there. I don't know why they chose to release that as a single when, as you said, Uncle Albert was already out a few years earlier for Paul.
Yeah, it was.
Well, some of these songs, too, Long and Winding Road, Birthday, those were songs that had been previously released and make them hits on their own again as a solo.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite Beatles album? Mm. I'm asking Russ at this point.
Oh, I do.
Well, yeah. I there's probably two. The White Album, definitely. Well, maybe three. Abbey Road, and then one of the earlier ones, Rubber Soul.
Rubber Soul is mine. Yeah, all-time favorite.
My two are Rubber Soul and Help.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we're all agreed on Rubber Soul.
Interesting.
Great album.
Yeah.
It's when they really first started stretching out and first started getting into things that weren't normal in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the songs got a little deeper. I think John was influenced by Bob Dylan lyrically.
Right.
It's a very acoustic album in many respects.
Extremely. Yeah. And I love that. In fact, my aunt gave it to me for Christmas in 1965. And I played the hell out of it. I think I flattened the grooves on it. I played it so much. That, and I'll tell you what, the 45 of Paperback Writer with Rain as the backside. Ah. Mm. Loved it.
Yeah.
And not many people have heard of Rain. I mean, it doesn't get much play, but it was a great song.
It always amazes me, Jim, that a lot of the songs we Beatles fans know and just take to heart as, oh, that was a big hit, were just album cuts that, you know, non-Beatle fans never heard, but it's part of our own personal lexicon, you know, it's
right.
Part of our heart.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, well, I mean, you know, I grew up with the Beatles. I mean, when I Want to Hold Your Hand first became huge was, what, 64?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was 14, so... And I remember I was all pissed off at the Beatles because all the girls really used to swoon. I go, what is so special about these ugly English guys? But I soon learned to eat those words. But hey.
Do you know, I remember going to school the day, it must have been a Monday because Ed Sullivan was on Sundays.
Right.
And I remember going to school and all the girls were singing She Loves You. I'll never forget that.
You know, I was a bit of a cartoonist when I was a kid, and at school, everybody loved Paul McCartney, and they would say, "Oh, draw the Beatles for us." So I, you know, during recess or after class or whatever, they'd stand around my desk, and I'd be sitting there with my pencil, drawing what didn't look anything like the Beatles, except they had long hair and guitars, but I would write their names under. You know, each of the four
sure.
long-haired little cartoon guys, and the first few times I wrote Paul McCartney. And I'll... So from the beginning, I have a little bit of
I think that was probably a common error back when they first started.
Yeah, who heard McCartney as a name?
Nobody had ever heard McCartney as a name. And I remember my sister was like a Beatle freak. And she goes, "Well, do you know what their names are?" I said, "The Beatles." And she goes, "No, what are their names individually?" I said, "I have no clue," because I didn't care at that time. Mm-hmm. She goes, "Well, it's John, Paul, George, and Ringo, and Paul is the cute one."
Yep, that was right.
And John is the smart one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quickly learned that George was the quiet one, and Ringo was the crazy one.
Yeah, so, happy-go-lucky is what they said, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. Are you guys pretty much able to distinguish when you hear a Beatles song, okay, that's so-and-so singing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm thrown by Ringo. Sometimes Ringo will slide in there, and I don't realize that it's him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially on some of the early stuff. I used to think, oh, that's George, but no, it turned out to be John.
Right.
And it was more the type of song that threw me off than the voice itself in those cases.
Or in like I Need You. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was John singing that, not George.
Yeah, I can see why. Sure.
And then I saw the concert, or one of the concerts, I guess, and it was George. And I go, oh, okay, I can get behind that. And then I realized that was his token. Okay, you can do one song for the album. That was
his song. Yeah, good way to put it. The token song by George and another George one Harrison, by Ringo.
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, I just had curiosity, and it's not to do with the book, but do you have any story or insight into how they originally got together as a group?
Probably the Reader's Digest version would be that group already. He was with kind of a skiffle group. And then he met Paul at a bit of a party that John and his band were playing. And they taught each other some guitar chords. And that's how Paul joined the band. And later on, George was actually a school friend of Paul's. And because he was a pretty accomplished guitarist, he wound up joining the band. The band was the Quarrymen, by the way.
Exactly.
As you might recall. And later on, now they would play in clubs in Germany, primarily. And there were other groups playing there as well, including Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. And their drummer was this guy named Richard Starkey. And they got to be friends backstage. And eventually, when the Beatles needed a new drummer to replace their existing drummer, Stu Sutcliffe, I think, or Pete Best,
I think is the more famous.
Yeah. Stu Sutcliffe was the original bassist, I guess.
Correct.
But Pete Best, they weren't really happy with his playing. So they brought in Rory Storm's drummer, Ringo, and stuck together ever since.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, what did that happen? What year?
That would probably be 1962. Two at the latest, possibly even 61, but I'll say 62. 62. Yeah, right in there.
And Paul never did like Ringo's drumming. Never did. Always thought he could do it better.
He did sometimes play the drums himself on some of these hits.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes. They would cut out Ringo's track and Paul would lay in drums. Well, how cold is that?
Yeah. I think that's probably why Ringo walked out a couple of times.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
I think at the height of their fame, I think a couple of them got pretty big heads. How would you not? I mean, really, to be honest, how could you not? I mean, here you are making millions upon millions and rolling in money. You've got the most popular band in the world. How could you not get a little pretentious?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think maybe Paul's ability to play all these different instruments, you know, that can go to your head, but not all that even besides, I like the fact that he can play guitar, bass, piano, drums, keyboards. I mean, you name it. I think he even plays the trumpet sometimes. He's a one-man band, and that's another thing I've always respected about a songwriter is, wow, they can not only sing their own music, but they can play exactly what they're hearing in their heads and get it out there.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
I loved your story about Paul, I mean, when Stu Sutcliffe, he left with that reporter and got me, and then he died of a brain tumor.
But yes,
when Paul took over the bass, it's like John handed him the bass and said, "Here, you're now the bass player."
Yeah. And Paul didn't even want to be the bass. Yeah,
and I that happened to me, and I had no idea how to play a bass, so I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Paul did too, and you know, and he was left-handed, so he had to play everything upside down and backwards.
Yes.
He got the really rotten end of the stick on that one.
He really did. But then he became the greatest bass player of all time. So
exactly. Yeah. And he played on a cheap bass with a guitar pick.
Yeah, right. The Hofner violin bass, as they call it.
Yeah, the Hofner violin bass. Yeah. And then somebody stole his original one, I guess. And
yeah, I think he had two or three. The original one probably is long gone. What a shame.
Yeah, I know. And then Hofner, I guess, gave him another brand new one.
Mm-hmm.
And he still got that one. That's what he travels with.
Yeah, he didn't play it for the longest time. I was surprised how many years he went without playing it.
Yeah.
He was playing this Yamaha bass for quite a while. But when he got in the studio with Elvis Costello for one of their projects together, it was Elvis who said, "Why don't you ever play the Hofner?" And so Paul brought it to the studio, and he's been playing it ever since, which is great.
There you go. There you go. Hey, look, we got to make one more quick break, and then we'll be back with you. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And right now, we're going to have a real brief word from Creative Edge. Hi, Jim Christina from the Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand. Get their mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started. Or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity, it's your brand. It's your future. And that's Mickey Mickelson as a publicist, and great guy. If you need a publicist, if you're in need of one, give Mickey a holler. His number is posted right there on his website. And you know what? I hate to tell you this, Gary, but we're out of time.
Mm-hmm. I hate that.
I mean, it flew by.
It did. I could talk Beatles for hours, obviously.
Oh, me too. I love the Beatles. I could too. But unfortunately, what is this? Oh, January. Okay, well, this next week, of course, is Christmas. We'll be dark, Christmas Eve at least, and we'll be dark on New Year's Eve. And we are going to be back live January. I don't know what the hell. I can't read this. Third, I guess. I don't know. What is January 3rd, January 4th, whatever.
7th, actually, is the first Thursday of January.
Is it the 7th? It's the first. Okay, January 7th. And with Mark Langley, and he'll be with us live in the studio. And of course, Gary, I want to wish you a merry, very merry Christmas and a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you so much. I hope you simply have a wonderful Christmas time yourself.
Well, I'm going to.
You could write a song with that title.
What a great idea.
Simply having a wonderful. Yes, there you go. We could probably sit down and do it. Thanks so much for spending your evening with us. I know it's sometimes you have other things you could be doing, and for you to give up your time to spend with us, it means a lot. So thanks so much.
Well, peace and love to you, as Ringo says.
And there you go. And and please, don't be bashful. When you get something going, give us a holler. We'll bring you back on.
I will. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Russ.
You're very welcome, Gary.
It's been a pleasure.
Same total pleasure. And that's it for our live shows for 2020. Thank God this year is over.
Can I tell you real quickly? I was reading somebody had a Twitter post, and it said, "Normally on New Year's Eve, I'm in bed by 9 o'clock. This year, I'm staying up and making sure that 2020 gets the hell out of here."
Yeah, me too. Well, we have to stay up because Bella is scared to death of the fireworks, and they go nuts around here with them.
Oh, goodness.
So anyway, and then of course, New Year's Eve, we are dark, and we'll have the best of, Yeah, playing next week and the week after, and then of course in the 7th again we'll have our show back live on the air. So Russ, have a great Christmas.
You do the same, Jim. Thank you so much. It's been great to do this all year long.
And it's been a great year, and I thank you again for filling in for me when I was incapable of doing the show.
Oh, as opposed to now you're capable, right?
Well, no, I'm not still, but at least I'm here and I'm not having to get up and run out of the room. So,
yeah, there you go. No, that's I'm good to do it. This has been a blast for me too.
And I want to thank Bobby Jean, who puts her time and effort into the show as well, and her husband Jim, and of course Ronan Rosner, who is our engineer and a good friend of the program and a good friend of ours, and of course the owner of LA Talk Radio, Mr. Sam Hassan. Wherever you are, have a happy, happy Hanukkah. And for all of you out there, from all of us here at LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block, have a very Merry Christmas, a very safe New Year, and we'll be seeing you next year. Good night, Russ.
Good night.